Welcome to I Am, I Have, brought to you by Happiful Magazine and Counselling Directory. Today we're talking to Poppy Jamie about her brilliant new book, Happy Not Perfect. We discuss the pitfalls of aiming for perfection, how a curious mindset can be our path to freedom and growth, and how to become a flexible thinker. Before we start today's episode, I wanted to encourage you to download the free Happiful app. With this, you'll be able to read daily articles, access Happiful magazine in its digital format, and search for mental health and well-being support in your area. Now, back to Poppy. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did, and would really love it if you could rate, review, and share. It helps others to find us, and we read every comment you post. I'm really happy to welcome Poppy Jamie to I Am, I Have today. Poppy is on a mission to help people with their outlook on life, stress, and anxiety from a place of lived experience. She's the founder of the award-winning Happy Not Perfect app, host of the Not Perfect podcast, and the author of the brilliant new book, Happy Not Perfect, Upgrade Your Mind, Challenge Your Thoughts, and Free Yourself from Anxiety. Welcome, Poppy.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm a huge fan of the podcast, so it's an honour to be here.
And it's lovely to have you here. And I've just been talking about your book that's coming out on the 10th of June. We've been talking about how exciting that is. And you're going to tell us more shortly. But can we start with you telling us what you think we should know about you?
Well, I think Happy Not Perfect probably sums me up in a nutshell, in all honesty. And I think I fought against Happy Not Perfect for so long because I was under this belief that, you know, I'd be more likable if I was perfect. And it didn't matter how hard I tried, everything would just always go a bit wrong. And that's when I was TV presenting. Everyone used to just call me Bridget Jones because it was really like the fireman's pole and, you know, arse and camera. And I kind of used to like fight against the fact that everything goes wrong. And I don't mean it to go wrong. And I'd get my words twisted. And, you know, when you have those sayings like kill two birds with one stone, my mind would always twist it and it'd be kind of like dyslexia would come out. And I'd be like, three birds, two stones, so, you know, just like completely mess up the whole that you know, those little sentences. And I would always land me in such self-flatulation of like, oh God, you've done it again. Why did he mess that up? Oh God, why did that interview go so wrong? And I think I have in recent years just accepted the fact that sometimes things just go wrong. And actually I am like deeply imperfect and in a way, trying and the mishaps of life are often where like the big giggles come. I just end up kind of having to laugh at myself a lot because I guess I've turned something that I used to really hate myself for into something that actually kind of does bring a lightness to my life. Otherwise, you know, being perfect, you take yourself far too seriously.
And we're going to talk about being happy, not perfect. But I just want to say that I kind of want to give you a round of applause because it's so relatable. It's what so many of us go through. You know, as you just said, the Bridget Jones moment, I can think of so many of those moments. And I just hear her kind of voice in my head going down the pole when they happen. So I feel like this is going to be a wonderful conversation and lots of people are going to be listening saying, I get that completely and it's refreshing to hear. So let's crack on with your I ams. And your first is, I am happy, not perfect. Can you tell us about aiming for perfection and your career and how you came around to changing it to happy, not perfect?
So in the book, I talk about my three core beliefs. And for me, it was quite life-changing when I started to really think about what were the beliefs I took on from a really young age and how have they instructed my behavior, my decision-making through my entire life before I started to go, okay, is this the right way I should be looking at life? And when I was little, I developed the belief that, you know, I just wasn't enough. And I think I was just so mediocre. And I write in the book, like, you know, when kids have a special like superpower, like Charlie has a really great ponytail. And when you're 12, if you've got a great ponytail, you're winning at life. And I kind of, you know, never had a good ponytail. I was like useless at sport. And I think not believing I had a superpower, I turned that into, well, I just need to try really, really, really hard. And so I, you know, became this like workaholic at the age of 13, like desperate kind of, I would work over the weekends. My parents would be like, stop, you know, put the books down. But I was, in my eyes, I was like, no, this is how hard I have to work if I'm going to, you know, be okay in life. And I think that then develops into this idea of perfectionism. Only when you're perfect are you okay. At times we kind of glorify perfectionism and we say, oh, well, I'm just a bit of a perfectionist. But actually what it really means is you have this inner critic that tells you, oh, you're not good enough. Your work is not good enough unless every T is crossed, you know, every I is dotted. And I looked at kind of inverted commas what the media portrayed as perfection. Like the media has changed a lot since we were teenagers growing up. But you would look in magazines and you'd be like, oh my God, well, clearly they've got it all together. Clearly they're basking in unbelievable amounts of happiness. And I generally thought that that was, you know, that was the route, is if you got perfect, it would almost be like life complete and then you're happy forever after, because that's what happened in the movies. It turned into me just having chronic burnout, chronic anxiety, because of course, life isn't perfect and we are imperfect. And also perfect is so transient. Even if you think you've done something really well, suddenly the next challenge appears and you don't do so well. So it's a completely unsustainable way of living life and actually deeply self-critical way of living life. And I remember when I was 25, I woke up in the middle of the night with these words, happy, not perfect. And it was like a huge, deep breath. And I didn't know what they meant or why they'd come to me, but I actually went online at 3 a.m. to buy the domain, because I was like, this is a message that feels like an antidote to all the things that I'm killing myself over. And actually, what does happiness mean? Like this self-acceptance that I was so far from. And even knowing the words happy, not perfect, I didn't actually really know what my route was to even embrace a new type of happiness. And when I really think about it, I had to completely redefine how what I even understood happiness to be. What I've kind of concluded on is a sense of self-acceptance, like accepting who we are, wherever we are in the path, even when life isn't anywhere near together. And we're in those moments of uncertainty when we've got no idea what our next step is. We just have that self-acceptance that, you know what, life and happiness isn't perfect, but that's actually happiness.
That's fantastic. And you've done a lot of work on that, haven't you? You've done a lot of research. I mean, obviously on your podcast, you speak to a lot of people, because one of the things about perfect, I always say, is that it's a word to beat ourselves with or other people with, and it leaves no room for error or improvement or evolvement. You know, it's just a finite, and as you said, perfection is also transient. So you will never, ever reach that pinnacle and stay there. You will always be working. I just wondered how you managed to make that change, because I think when you've been in a position where you've been striving for what we talk about being perfection for so long, how did you shift your mindset?
Well, I would say you've just also touched on a super interesting point, this idea that we actually put perfection standards onto others around us. And that's really dangerous, because we then are disappointed when people don't feel they've shown up enough for us, or they're not the person we want them to be because they're not being the perfect friend or the perfect partner. There's such a lack of like forgiveness or like lack of like understanding the humanity within everyone. And I actually also think this touches upon like cancel culture in a way. Some obviously canceling is great, but also at the same time, are we expecting this level of perfection that there's no room for growth, or there's no room for kind of mistakes where we go, actually, I learned from that and I'm actually a better person because of it? It's just this kind of crazy expectations we place on ourselves and others, and we do live in a culture that kind of supports this. So I thought it was just a really interesting point that I just touched on there.
Social media feeds onto that, because there's a record of everything we've done. And you were very kind earlier on and said when we were teenagers. I'm afraid I'm older. And I grew up and I went to university when there was no social media. Social media kind of came to me in my early 20s. So I know I made a lot of mistakes. I know I thought a lot of things, but there's no record of them. So I think there is a pressure, you know, and there's all kinds of spectrum of this, but there is a pressure of having everything we've thought, every mistake we've made, recorded for kind of posterity. So I do think that's difficult when it comes to perfection, because we're trying to pitch ourselves against a younger self and apply the same rules.
Absolutely. And also, like, you know, human beings are comparing creatures because we learn a lot about ourselves through comparison. So we are naturally orientated to go, oh, this coffee is hot. Do I prefer it colder? Like, what was that like compared to the one I had yesterday? But those kind of like, I guess that natural curiosity maybe, you know, allows us to explore, obviously can turn really toxic when it comes to like perfection, because we go online and now perfection now looks normal because we have these digital avatars that arguably can lead perfect lives because we can edit them to be so. And even though we know deep down, and I remember doing a TED talk 5 years ago now called Addicted to Likes, and it was all around kind of social media and the fact that we were becoming like addicted to this like social validation of others and caring more about that before we've even validated ourselves. You know, even though we know this, we've known it for a good few years how like social media is like difficult, I even still find myself forgetting that everybody is, you know, has become so good at projecting perfection. And to your point about social media now documents every stage of our life, when I look back to like 16, like the makeup choices, like the blue shimmery eyeshadow that like didn't know a boundary, and the clunky eye mascara that I thought was cool when it dripped down my cheeks, like, I mean, just all of these things that I think they were just like, you know, self-exploration. It's almost, in a perfect world, we don't allow ourselves like creativity in a way because we're not able to make mistakes. And when we make mistakes, that is when we're most creative, because, you know, we wouldn't have, and in the book I talk about this, you know, Thomas Edison, if he wasn't able to make mistakes, we would never have even invented the light bulb. It was because he tried over, you know, hundreds of times, failed hundreds of times, lived in imperfection, that he was able to create something really valuable.
That's a very good point. You know, we need to make mistakes in life to make things happen. It's how we learn as children as well, isn't it? It's how we learn to move through life. And I just wanted to go back to moving from that vision of perfection that you had to moving towards happy. Did you need a lot of help to change your mindset? Because I know that you, as you said, you got very, very burnt out and unwell.
Absolutely. I think the mind is, you know, they say it takes kind of a village to, you know, like grow a child. I generally think it takes a village for us to manage our mind. And what I mean by that is, you know, like books, podcasts, loads of different people that are giving you loads of different understandings of the mind. I think for me, what created change was learning about my mental health. I do think in everything, learning is the root of all change, because if we don't know better, that really famous Maya Angelou quote, when we know better, we can do better. But when we don't know better, it is so easy to live life by our default. You know, I even had a psychotherapist mother, and I grew up kind of being really exposed to mental health. My father had mental illness, so I really understood it from outside of me. It was only when in my mid-20s, when actually my body said, yeah, we're not going to go on anymore. And I was like severely bloated, and it took me nearly over a year to like recover, because I think we're so good at ignoring the signs. And I was so good at being like, I'm exhausted, but I will always find a reason why I was going to ignore my like physical sensations, the tiredness, just to finally have another coffee. And no, I have to go to that meeting. And no, I have to go to that dinner, and I have to, you know, work and say yes to everything. And I think when you have like, I guess like the severe, like, oh, I'm not good enough, you are susceptible to being a people pleaser because you just so want people to like you. And I think it was my physical health that deteriorated so much that I was like, okay, I can't live like this. Like I generally can't. I'm like lying in bed, unable to do any work. It was like, you know, 100% to zero. Like I could barely like respond to an email, because like if you have chronic exhaustion, like you understand, you just can't do, like you can't even reply to a text message. It's like too much for the brain. And in that moment, I had to take it really slow. And a friend introduced me to breath work, which was the first step, I think, in me just even being able to kind of slow down my nervous system and slow down that kind of overwhelmed and overloadedness of cortisol that was causing the bloating. And breath work was this unbelievable experience, because meditation is something, and this is why I built the Happy Not Perfect app, because I remember everyone saying, well, you should just meditate. And I was like, but I can't meditate. I find it really, really difficult. I've got a really, really busy mind, and I find it I just, unless someone is like sitting with me and I'm doing it with someone, I find it practically impossible to do myself. And surely that is not the only anecdote to, you know, anxiety. And that's when I started to go and take a, you know, go on this massive exploration of like, what else can I do and what else can I help other people with? And hence why the Happy Not Perfect app is like full of all these different tools. But breath work, they say, is 40 years of therapy in 40 minutes. And I truly believe that, because you, this was especially in America, and I hope after the pandemic, it's going to be way more breathwork classes in the UK. And there is, and if you look online, there is, and you've got James Dowler, he's online, he's brilliant. Breathe with James on Instagram. And basically, conscious connected breathing is taking long, continuous breaths, and you basically hyper oxygenate the brain. And when we stuff so much down, what I was doing, like I was feeling this. Nope, I'm not going to feel it today. No, I don't have time to feel it today. We stuff it all down into our body. And they say your issues are in your tissues. And I got taught this from my mother, before she was a psychotherapist, she was a physiotherapist. And the reason why she moved over to looking after the mind is because in all her physical patients, she would say, so when did that bad back start? And they'd be like, oh, when I was going through a divorce, or when I was going through an emotional event. And so what breathwork does, it literally, you can't push anything down because it's all coming up. And I remember just crying in this breathwork class. And it was the most freeing, like all of these emotions that I had felt for years and had never just been terrified to really acknowledge, finally were just coming out. And I cried for like 3 hours straight after this class. And I like gone to dinner and they're whimpering at dinner. And I'm so sorry. They're just coming. In that moment, I was like, okay, you need to learn what's going on here. Why on earth did this happen? And so I actually trained to become a breathwork instructor, because I was like, every time something has freed me in such a life-changing way, I'm like, more people need this. How do I ensure more people have access to this? And then I started to assemble this team for Happy Not Perfect of psychotherapists, psychologists, mindfulness experts. And that was really the whole point of like me wanting to put all of this in the book, because I've been privileged enough to meet literally the world's greatest experts in explaining the mind. And what I've then learned, you know, like you need to know how can you fix a car if you don't know how a car works? I needed to know the best education we can give ourselves is our mind. Because then we know when we are feeling anxious, when we do get into stress states, because even though I know this, of course, I can't stop human emotions. When something happens, I naturally have a reaction, but it's not overpowering. I'm like, okay, right. I'm going to take five. I'm going to do my breathing. I'm going to do my journaling. I'm going to use the tools I know, because I know why they work. And suddenly I start making different decisions. Suddenly my past isn't predicting my future, because I can use my present to change the direction.
And what's beautiful about everything that you're doing now, and I said it at the top of the podcast, is it's from a place of lived experience, you know, and you're using that experience and everything that you've assimilated to help other people. And you talk about this in the book. You talk about that you shared breathwork with a friend of yours who you thought was the biggest cynic and was going to laugh at you and say, you just breathed it all away. And actually what happened for him was he had a similar reaction, and he was able to say, I've been having panic attacks. And that opened a conversation between you. And I think sharing our experience and kind of paying it forward as you're doing is a wonderful thing to do. And it helps us all learn. You said earlier on, learning is so important. We should never stop learning. And reading your book, I've certainly learned new things that I will be trying. And breath work is something I'm incredibly interested in. So thank you for that. And we're going to move on to your next, which is, I am learning to live life with flexibility. Now tell us about flexibility and how the Flex framework can really work for everyone.
So flexibility and thought flexibility is what I've landed on as my antidote, and I guess one huge solution that has changed the way I look at everything in life. And so what does it mean to, let's go into like, what does it mean to be stiff, and then what does it mean to be flexible? What it means to be a stiff thinker, which is what we all naturally are by default, is us being in constant reaction mode. Stiff thinking, which is, you know, something naturally, inherently we all have because our brain is wired in a stiff way, refers to the fact that we have an 80% negative bias, because obviously our brains are built to predict and protect. And so all our brain does...
I didn't know it was that much.
Crazy, right? All our brain does in every single moment is asking the question, have I been here before? Is there any danger? So how we assimilate the present moment is our brain is trying to pattern match back to the past. And then it goes, oh, was it dangerous before? Was it dangerous before? And so then as a consequence, we then have a feeling. Often we do live out Einstein's definition of sanity, doing the same thing, expecting a different result, because our brain just wants to do the same thing over and over again, because if it survived it before, it will do it again. And that's why you end up sometimes like going into the same type of relationships all the time, because familiarity actually feels good, even if familiarity has been hurtful. We have an 80% negative bias, but that's not, oh God, our stupid brains. It's actually, God, our brains are just trying to look after us, but it means it gives us a very negative outlook on life. And so we can watch the news, for example, and start to then spend our life being, oh, the world is ending. This is terrible. This is terrible. This is terrible. And obviously those sort of thoughts are so detrimental to our physical health because they stimulate our stress response, the cortisol, inflammation, it lowers our immune system. And we also then have a thing called confirmation bias, which means that our brain loves to confirm our belief system. So that's why I spoke at the beginning of this podcast about you need to know what your belief system is. What do you actually truly believe about yourself and the world? Because again, the brain likes to constantly feel safe. So it likes to confirm what we think we know, because it then kind of tells us, oh yeah, I know how this plays out. I know how this plays out. But often we're confirming really negative beliefs. So, you know, I used to, for example, have these like, you know, really feel so inadequate. And then if somebody didn't call me back, I'd be like, see, I'm inadequate. Like if I was enough, they would want to call me back. So I'm putting on meaningless events. And it's like Shakespeare says, you know, there's nothing good or bad in this world. Thinking makes it so. And so when we understand our negative bias, our confirmation bias, and the fact that, you know, we have these like two like systems in our brain, the fight or flight and the rest and relax system, we understand that actually we like jump to conclusions. We assume things that are not even true. We let our inner critics run our day because we believe the thoughts. We know thoughts are not facts. And then we also have to be right because that is safety. So that's why, you know, I think we see all these extreme arguments on social media, off social media, because it's like, I'm right, you're wrong. And we have no ability to look at another person's perspective and go, huh, how can I relate to that? Because we're all so similar. We all have, every human being has the same needs. We all want to feel loved. We all want to feel accepted. And we want to feel like we're enough. And so when we suddenly go, oh, actually, we're all starting from the same point, but actually we learn our fears and we learn our prejudices. And when we say we learn our fears, like no baby walks into this world going like, I hate airplanes. Like I've got, you know, fear of anxiety. Like we don't, we've learned the fear of like flying or whatever. Or no baby goes, oh, I'm dancing. Don't look at me. I look like an idiot. We learn self-consciousness. So this idea that if we learn these things, we can unlearn them. And a flexible thinker is one that reminds itself of like the best discovery of neuroscience, of neuroplasticity, that our brain can change. Our brain is totally malleable. We can rewire our brain, we can rewire our thought patterns, and we can use the present moment to constantly release the past and then start making decisions so we can redesign our future. In the book, I talk about a method called the flex. And the flex is about learning how to become a flexible thinker, learning how to move out of stiff land, like stiff thinking, move away from that negative bias, move away from that confirmation bias to create new belief systems that totally change our outlook. You know, like people are trustworthy. The world is good. The world is always working out for us. And when we think like the world is always working out for us, suddenly challenges become like opportunities. Like moments, like struggle actually becomes this maybe moment of growth and learning for our greater evolution. Biggest part of flexibility, it's not about numbing anymore. I think when we're stiff, we want to, what I used to do is like feeling something and that's uncomfortable. So we distract and we like numb behavior, like go on online shopping, go on social media, go like, and that's why I developed like, you know, being almost like addicted to work. It was almost like a distraction away from my mind. But actually flexibility and like the first step of connection is always constantly just accepting how we feel. It's not about toxic positivity. Like, I must be happy. I must be positive. Otherwise,
yes.
Vertical must manifest, you know?
Yeah.
It's actually just going, you know what? Today I'm feeling like really stressed and that's okay. And then being able to accept and then bend our thoughts.
I mean, that's a fantastic explanation. And I was nodding my head furiously throughout and actually wanted to take notes on the negativity bias, confirmation bias, because I think it's something we can all, again, relate to. And especially that numbing out, turning to something that can distract us. So you talked about becoming a workaholic, you know, quite often it feels like if we push through, especially if it's about perfection, especially if it's about meeting other people's needs, you know, being a people pleaser, we talked about, we feel that we can take that underlying feeling away, but that's not feasible in the long term. And when we go back to breath work, you know, that idea that we're just pushing it down, pushing it down, pushing it down, at some point that's going to rise to the surface. And I love flexible thinking. What I would ask you is, how does someone start if they feel they're really entrenched in the opposite?
I think it goes back to like self-awareness. You know, the ancient Greeks said, know thyself. And I thought that was like the most incredible piece of wisdom. And we forgot it for thousands of years. And now finally we're like, oh, okay, maybe self-awareness is helpful. Asking really simple questions. For example, step two of the flex is curiosity. When you're like really stuck in like stiff thinking, we sometimes completely lack curiosity, and we all have the power to be curious. That is, you know, a human right we all have. And it's asking better questions of yourself. You're suddenly like, before you like jump to a conclusion, like, well, I know she didn't email back and this means that, you go, is this true? Is this true? Question mark. And that's why Byron Katie was a huge inspiration and a huge like change agent for me, because she has these four questions and her work is called The Work. And she asks these four questions that are really helpful to ask yourself when you're like stuck in a thought rut. And you go, is this true? So let's say, okay, this person hasn't texted me back, like they don't like me. I'm like, is this true? Well, I think so, because otherwise she would text me back. Like, can I be 100% sure it's true she doesn't like me? Well, no, because I'm not in her mind. I don't know. She could be really busy. No, I don't know. How does this thought make me feel? Like, well, inadequate, unworthy, just insecure, no energy. Who would I be without this thought? Like happy, my best self, confident, excited. And you suddenly go, often the root of our suffering is in our thoughts. That may not be true. And you're like, oh, right. Okay. And sometimes it does take like professional help or even a really good friend to help you see a blind spot, because often we're so convinced by our very powerful inner critic storytellers that our storytelling brain is like, they hate you. And you're like, I know, you know, because our inner critic knows our worst fears and it's going to taunt us with them. So that's why like having that friend who's like, okay, let me give you a bit of a reality check. Let me give you a perspective shift. And that's why I have flexible friends that can like bend your thoughts. And you're like, oh, actually the view from here is very different. Curiosity.
So true. And one of the reasons that I said yes, when you said, is it true? I hadn't read that. And years ago in a previous job, when I was very unhappy and it was quite a toxic environment, I said to a colleague, I can't leave until I find another job. And she said, is that true? And that day I got on the train and came home and started to work out what I would need to leave that job in order to be stable. And it was such a life changing. And I don't say that, you know, kind of easily, but it was a life changing question, because I was stuck in the kind of thought that I just had to keep on going, even though my mental and physical health was definitely on the decline. So I'm really, really grateful that you said that. And also, what's the name of the writer that you spoke about?
Byron Katie, and her book is called The Work. As I said, like the brain loves certainty. We hate uncertainty. So when we feel uncertain, like moving like out of a job, for example, like the brain is like, no, don't do it. Like it's, you know, we're going into
hang and suffer.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the brain kind of is like, you know, better the devil you know than you don't. Like it really like follows that kind of line of thought. And we do, like, curiosity is our route to freedom and our route to endless possibility and our route to growth and our route to creating a life that we didn't even dream of.
I love it. Your next I am is, I am ready to manifest my wildest future. Tell us about your wildest future.
I love the word wildest self. And I use this in the book because I think that the world often like tells us like who we should be, or someone else says like, you know, you should be this. And actually when we are like our truest, wildest, most expressed self, we are our best us. It's like that unapologetic us. And to me, that is what an amazing future will look like. Every single day I work on like deconditioning myself, all the things that I have learned to think about myself or be as this kind of, you know, this, the labels we place on ourselves. Actually, how would my future look if I took off those labels, did what truly lights me up, which potentially is like so far away from what society thinks that we should do? That to me is like my dream. And the last chapter of the book is about flex your future. And it's about kind of how do we create flexible futures, which are building it in alignment with our wildest, truest self and desires. And I think, you know, sometimes when we think about the future, we can like create such quantifiable goals. Like I want to manifest a house. I want to manifest a car, like, you know, and that's fine. Obviously we all need like, you know, as I kind of call them like cookies, we all need cookies to think to ourselves, oh, like, wouldn't that be nice to have that? Like, you know, that something kind of like, we know it's kind of superficial, but we kind of want it. That's great. We all need superficial cookies. But actually, like, what is that sustainable future that is going to really light us up every single day? And so you can use the flex method in doing that. And in the book, I use like loads of different exercises, like to A, even help you understand what that wildest self wants. Because we often like lose sight of our wildest self because, you know, the demands of life take over. So when we peel back the layers, and I think it is really helpful to have a direction you want to go in life, you know, have these like untapped dreams, because if a plane takes off, if you set the destination even just 2 degrees to the right, the plane lands in a completely different location. So I think we need to set ourselves on a journey. This idea of manifestation, that my like problem with it sometimes in the traditional sense is that we kind of, you know, set these very rigid, stiff goals. And if we don't meet them, we then feel disappointed in ourselves. And actually, I'm like, let's be a flexible manifester. And so I have these goals that I'm like really excited, that really aligns with like, you know, my kind of like true soul being. And then whatever unfolds is meant to be. Like that is actually exciting the way it folds. It's like set the destination, put your greatest effort in, and then be flexible about like what happens. And so that's why I wrote that.
The lightness in your face as you were talking about wildest future and people thinking about that, I think speaks for itself. I mean, obviously this is a podcast, so people can't see it, but I would encourage anyone who's listening to think about that for themselves. You know, we are so rigid sometimes. And, you know, I think the other thing is that we often measure our progress, or we think about the future in terms of our age. You know, where do we, when I'm 30, when I'm 40, when I'm, you know, and actually that can be really limiting. And the idea of thinking about your wildest future and flexibility in your thinking is actually, it brings a huge amount of optimism to that thought process.
Yeah, completely. Because I think sometimes then our goals can then imprison us as well. Yes. So that's why I'm like, if you're flexible with your goals and you think to yourself, you know, there's an exercise in the book about, you know, kind of really setting aside like the values you want in your future. Because if you're like, you know, I want a job that pays me this, well, is that a job that pays you this and you're working 7 days a week and not seeing any of your friends? Is that like, you know, so this is where like, you know, kind of quantifiable goals can go really wrong. Mm. So I'm like, okay, so, but I want a job that I don't want to stop working until I'm like 80. I want something actually I don't even call work, because I am just, I get loads of fulfillment out of it. I've like redefined what that even is for me. And then the other stuff kind of unfolds, because it's not something that you may be getting one thing, but not the other. It's like a, you know, kind of, it's like wholesome goal setting.
I definitely love that concept, instead of that kind of rigidity and punishing, which is kind of pushing perfection to the future as well, isn't it? It's giving yourself these immovable goals that can only serve as a kind of stick to beat yourself with. And your final is I have faith, and I'd love you to tell us about having faith.
I love science, and I love diving in, and hopefully, like, you know, this, and that's really been like the root of change. And then I think I got to a point where actually having a belief that everything is unfolding for our best good, and actually there is this higher power, because I think sometimes when we think we are totally in control of our lives, it kind of like intensifies anxiety. And actually when we let go and surrender, and I truly believe like everybody is on their most divine path, and even like things that just appear such disasters are working out for our greatest good, it actually enables everyone to take a deep breath and go, oh, it's like, we just need to try our best and the rest is being looked after. You know, for me, like, you know, even with this book, for example, I was getting so nervous and I'm doing all my exercises and I'm doing my compassionate thinking. And I'm like, what did I tell a friend experiencing what I am now? And then at the end of the day, I have to go and I let go. And there's this quote I always return to, what is meant for you will not pass you by. We can sometimes like beat ourselves up, but you can go on like Instagram, which is just like so like, also like 1% world. It's just like so 2D. And we forget like our individual, I think, purpose and journey. And that's why, like, how can on earth can we compare ourselves to someone? It's like comparing an apple and a donkey. Do you know what I mean? They're just like two separate things. Just because we look similar to each other doesn't mean we are similar at all. Yeah. And so I think having faith that everything is working out for our best good. And we know it's true, because if you look back on your life, I'm sure everyone listening can find an example of, oh, actually, yeah, that was kind of awful, like a breakup. Like, oh my God, that was so heartbreaking. But then suddenly you found the love of your life and you're like, thank God we broke up. But at the time it just felt like the world was over, but actually the world had a better plan for us and we didn't know it. So I wanted to include, like, I have faith, because actually I think having faith in a higher power is like often such a reassuring, and for me, I've like had so much evidence of it. So I'm like, Poppy, release your control.
And that's exactly it, isn't it? That idea of just, you know, as you were talking, I was actually picturing the idea of letting go, physically letting go, because sometimes we can grip so tight and we can't change things. You know, all that does is it creates that tension, because we're trying to control, we're trying to drive the ship, or see, I'm mixing up my metaphors here. So, you know, but we're pushing so hard for something to go in a certain way. It's not going to happen because it's not within our gift to make it happen. And if we let go, we can respond. But I think having faith is really important within that. And I'm glad you raised that, because it's not something we talk about a lot, is that idea of having faith. You know, we always look for the answers or the solutions. I'm going to ask you a final question, which is, if you could meet Poppy 10 years from now, so 10 years since your first book went out, what do you hope she would say to you?
I think she would probably say that last point of just like, you know, have faith. It's all going to be okay. Because even when I'm like so involved in all of this work, you still obviously have like natural worries, like you mentioned, like the age thing, and you go, oh my God, you know, like children and all these things. And I think in 10 years time, she's going to be like I would say 10 years back to my 20-year-old self, oh my God, the things you're worrying about, if only you knew it was all going to be absolutely fine and you're on your path and it's going to take you in a million different directions you probably didn't expect, but actually that's part of the adventure. Yeah, I think she would say that.
Poppy, you've been wonderful. I really, really enjoyed talking to you. Your book is fantastic. Can you share with everyone where they can find you, and about the book and your Instagram and app?
Yes. Oh, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you so much, Lucy. I love the format of this podcast. Anyone can find the book, just Happy Not Perfect, at obviously all kind of bookstores, you know, Waterstones, Amazon, and then obviously independent ones. So wherever you shop for your books, you can find me on Instagram at Poppy Jamie. And honestly, I really love hearing from you. Like, this book is so personal. It's like, I include diary entries and
I love them.
It's so funny reading back to your 12-year-old diary entries. David Thompson dumped me 3 days later. And I really would love to hear from you because honestly, I hope this book is just a beginning of a conversation for many people. So please, please let me know your thoughts and what has resonated.
Thank you, Poppy.
Thank you so much, Lucy.
Thank you for listening to I Am, I Have. Don't forget to download the free Happiful app, and we'd really love it if you could rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast too. Before you go, I wanted to let you know that on the Happiful app, we have information about where you can find mental health support, including the counselling directory. If you need immediate help, Samaritans are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on 116 123, or you can email jo@samaritans.org. Help is available. This podcast is hosted and produced by me, Lucy Donahue, for Happiful. I hope you'll listen again soon.